at the end of the day, it's a huge puzzle, and it doesn't have an answer, and that's the fun of it. It's what are the answers that you want to give to the questions that are being asked by everyone in the process.
That's a great way to think of it, because it's, you could put the money here or you could shoot these scenes, but then you're going to have to sacrifice that. And what are the ways that you can still make the story come together? And you're right, it's not a problem to be solved like math where there's an answer. It's a puzzle that you can assemble in 100 ways. Welcome to Filmmaking Frame, the video podcast that interviews industry professionals to find out the tips and tricks to make it behind the silver screen. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Tom Dexter.
And myself, Daniel Hughes. With us today is Bart Stanisławek. Great to have you with us.
Hiya, thank you for having me.
Bart has just won a BAFTA for his animation short, Crab Day, a fantastic story of a young boy seeking to retain his sensitivity in a world telling him he needs to grow up. Bart initially trained as an actor before transitioning to producing, completing his MA at the National Film and Television School. Great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, first question. Tell us about producing and what does a producer do, especially on your current short?
So the way I see a producer's role is you're basically the pivot between the creative and the financial sides of the process. You're there to support the vision of the story, help everything stay on track, kind of help everyone through while also providing the support around that and sourcing all the finances and spreadsheets and this and that, and balancing those two things so that you can kind of get the best version of the product at any point as you move forward through.
Nice. And that seems like it's a big departure from the kind of demands that acting would have. When did you know you wanted to make that transition?
It actually began when, because while I was doing acting, I was doing loads of part-time jobs. So I had been, you know, working as a waiter. I was making sandwiches at Pret. And then I was also flyering a lot. And then I started working a bit more in marketing and got into more of a logistical position where I was a promotions coordinator for a street team of like 50 plus people doing events all over London, kind of multiple venues. Different campaigns for, you know, Disney, WWF, for National Gallery, for all sorts of things. And I really enjoyed the logistical side of things, but I was thinking, well, if I want to continue doing this, I want to do this in the film space. And then my agents arranged a workshop with a group of us, with the directors at the National Film and Television School. So I went there, met Michael Hoffman, which was great, did a little workshop with him and then did a workshop with the directors. And that was when I had a little bit more of an insight of A, how the school works, but also of that as a possibility of kind of expanding the toolkit that I already had. And so I looked at the school, I looked at the different courses, and I also came from a background of collaborative and devised theater. That was the training that I had. And it had a focus on, acting, but also on creating your own work and writing and directing and also producing, that was more theater-based. And so all of that kind of came crashing together. And I was also really wanting to instigate more change within the industry of bringing more diversity and more voices. And I knew so many wonderful people whose work I also want to help amplify, that I had began working with a friend on writing some shorts, and the plan was to produce the short, and then the pandemic happened. And I was thinking of delving into producing a little bit more fully a few years later down the line, but I saw that as an opportunity to take a breather and, you know, read up books, and I decided to apply for the course. And, you know, throughout that process, I wanted that to be kind of my learning, and it then turned into a couple of extra years of learning, which, and I'm still riding that wave. And, you know, I've learned so much more about the process. And my perspective of what that role is has changed massively.
You said it really changed what your view of what the role was. Could you speak a bit more about that?
Yeah, I think what drew me towards that course specifically was because it also had a view on the creative side of things. And I think a lot of people, and I did too, you know, when you think of producer, you think of someone with a cigar with like loads of money. And I was like, well, I've been working in Pratt and running around and I don't have that. And I don't smoke. So I was like, that's not.
And was that requirement to be a producer?
Oh, absolutely. yeah, I developed a bad habit. No, but it's, there's a lot more, I think there's so much creativity within it. And like I said, I come from a collaborative background in theater, and finding that within film was also really exciting for me, where, you know, every single person has their own ship that they're steering in a way. And as the producer, I like to think like you're kind of like the shining light where everyone's kind of coming towards and trying to make sure everyone's on track, which is really exciting. And then I also used to love math at school, and kind of going into the acting side, I let go of that a bit. So jumping onto that got me really excited as well.
And because a lot of movie magic takes a lot of dollar bills, so working out how you're going to spend them and where the greatest impact is. And I know from my experience in location management, it's a lot of working out where to spend the money to have the biggest impact on screen. And the idea that that's not creative has always seemed crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's a huge puzzle, and it doesn't have an answer. And that's the fun of it. It's what are the answers that you want to give to the questions that are being asked by everyone in the process.
That's a great way to think of it, because it's, you could put the money here or you could shoot these scenes, but then you're going to have to sacrifice that. And what are the ways that you can still make the story come together? And you're right, it's not a problem to be solved like math where there's an answer. It's a puzzle that you can assemble in 100 ways.
Yeah. And I think coming from a theater background where if you're creating within the space, we'd always have the lighting person in, the sound person in, and everyone working on the ground. And you'd have a random person come in who has no idea what you're working on. But you open the space up to anyone throwing in an idea, and you take that idea and you see if it works. If it works, great. If it doesn't, that's okay. We move on. And it's that kind of process that I really enjoy, of finding what works versus, you know, like, this is my idea and I'm going to push it through.
Do you think that's particularly important as a producer when you're working with writers and directors? I think a bad producer would, like you say, drive through their own ideas, but a good producer might have that collaborative process. So how do you see your role as a producer working with a director and I guess funneling their idea through? What's that process of working with a director like?
I think a lot of it for me comes through, you know, you have to build up that relationship, and also what is the project? Why do they want to tell it? What is the story about? It's a lot of asking questions and, you know, getting those answers. And I try to pick projects that resonate with me in some way so that I can feel connected to it as well. And like I can bring something special and I understand it on some level, so I can then help them achieve that or amplify it. And, you know, it's helping bring that vision to life. And same with writers, you know, asking a lot of questions like why this, why that. I love interrogating a world and asking, how does this work, or who are we with? And it's, yeah, does that.
And what does it make you feel, and what are you intending the audience to feel, and what's the motivation behind something?
Yeah. Like, this is one thing that I found tricky moving into film, where in theater, you have an audience there. I'm not, obviously, until like the first night, but you have that live feedback and you can shift day to day little things, how you do it, how it moves around. Everyone can adjust so that the impact on the audience is greater. When you're working on film, you imagine and hope. And then when you watch it for the first time, you just pray that like it lands how it does, how you want it to. And if it does, that's wonderful. But then if it doesn't, or like there's a surprising reaction, that's also wonderful, because it's, I think reaching an audience is the most wonderful, one of the most wonderful parts of the process, because you want ultimately the story to be heard.
I heard someone describe it once as making a film in itself is a miracle, because of all of the pieces that go into it. Making a good film, even more so. And as you say, you don't necessarily know it's a good film, whatever that means, until it lands in front of an audience.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why festivals and cinema experiences are so fantastic, to show your film, also to be there as an audience. You get that sense of it.
Yeah, now being a producer, I appreciate bad films so much more. It's a miracle at the end of the day. I completely agree.
So I was wondering if you could talk. So you reminded me basically that when I've produced shorts in the past, you don't even know it's good until it's finished. So often you'll see, you know, the daily rushes, and you're like, yeah, it kind of looks all right, but it kind of looks not quite right. And it's because you haven't had it sound or composing or, you know, the music, the design, the VFX, all those different pieces that come into it. And I had to learn very early on that it might look terrible now, but it will be, it will come together. And so you have to kind of keep it going along that track, understanding that it's going to be better with each iteration.
Yeah.
So I was wondering maybe you could talk through to our audience the process of putting a film together. So let's say someone comes to you with an idea of a story, maybe they have a draft script. So you've got that. What is the process of building a team and putting it together and ending up with let's say a short film at the end?
I mean, first, you know, you go to the story, you go through it, you see how it hits, how the script works, where it comes from, like depending on, you know, if it's a writer or a writer director and what the ultimate vision is, because you can have a version of the film as a script, but then how I see it is through all of the stages of the filmmaking process is just constantly being rewritten. And I try to find the elements of kind of what are the most important things so that when you do pick your team, you know, you'll have chats with those people as well. And what is it that they connect to and whether they align with that vision ultimately. And if they bring something new and exciting that can really kind of shake things up a little bit or give it its own special touch. Thinking of Crab Day, when we were picking people to the team, it was, it's a story that resonated with myself and the director, and Alex, the writer, very strongly. And so when we were picking everyone else for all of the other departments, we were looking for people who the story resonated strongly with. And I feel like everyone on the team brought something really personal and touching to it. And it was a very open process where, I mean, animation is a little bit different from live action because you write it first and then you have the animatic and then you plan out all of the beats together. And you know, it was countless of hours spending with the director, writer, myself, and the editor, Donya, and kind of working out all of those beats. And then, you know, bringing in sound, music, and kind of temporary compositions to that and how that brings it together. Because in animation, once something is set, it's a bit more solid. You can't like, oh, why don't we swap this shot out for that shot? Because this has been drawn. And I mean, you can draw something else, but it's a much more time. What's the word?
Intensive.
Yeah, time-intensive process.
And because the NFTS short films, the animation, it's a year-long process. Mm. So, you know, you're creating it bit by bit, but you've got a year, but you also have a deadline to work to.
Yeah. And we, like, the idea for the story was born at the start of the course. Alex and Ross did a workshop together and they came up with the idea. And there was a 5-minute animatic. And then towards the end of first year, which is when the producers come on board, they showed me the animatic. I completely fell in love with it. I cried. I was like, I really want to be part of this. I want to help, you know, bring it together. And I mean, it was also wonderful doing animation at the school, which is another reason why I wanted to, because I wanted to do live action animation, because there was a point where I almost did an animation degree. But then went down the acting pathway. So it was lovely touching back with that. And then we expanded the 5 minutes into the 11 minutes that is ultimately what it is. And that was, again, the process of asking what the rules of the world are, what the characters are, who can we deepen, like how can we make this deeper? Because the wonderful thing about Ross's work is it's so simple and yet complex, and it was about straddling that line of making sure that it keeps its simplicity while deepening everything around it at the same time.
Can you talk a bit more about what it was about the story that connected and resonated with you?
Yeah, it's a story of a boy who's sensitive and a bit of an outsider and doesn't feel like he fits in with his community. And I'm Polish. I grew up in Cyprus. I live here. I became basically an immigrant when I was like 3, 4. So I've never really felt kind of part of a national identity in a way. And like in Poland, I'm not seen as Polish. In Cyprus, I'm not Cypriot here. I'm not British. Like I've come across people who are very open to that in every place, but also people who aren't very nice. And growing up, I was also a very sensitive child, and quite emotional. And so I really resonated with that feeling of feeling like you don't fit in. And I mean, the film is also in part an analogy for not fitting in. Like for me, it's also, you know, about being queer and not fitting in. Like the crab is in the closet at one point. It's it's not hidden too deeply. And so, yeah, it is that thing. I know it's similar for Alex in that way. And then for Ross, he grew up in a seaside town, so it comes from that as well. And yeah.
Makes sense. And I think it's a message that a lot of people can connect with, and, yeah, and not as extensively as your experience, yeah, but I'm half British, half German. Mm. And I remembered growing up in school, I would get asked, if there was another world war, who would you fight for?
Oh, wow.
And what they were asking was, are you one of us?
Yeah.
And the answer I'd give is, well, I'd look at, you know, the moral standing of both sides, because it was Second World War, Germany was pretty clearly in the wrong on that one. Doesn't mean they would automatically be on the... And it wasn't an acceptable answer to my peers, because they weren't asking for, you know, my position on ethics. They were asking like, so are you in? Are you one of us? Or yeah, are you a stranger? And I, by not wanting to have to cut off part of that identity of the German side, it was alienating people on my British side. And that, so not nearly as extensively as, because I was at least British growing up in Britain. So I can't imagine what it's like Polish going Cypriot, but I can connect a little bit to feeling that, well, I'm not quite from here in the way that other people seem to be. And
yeah, so, oh my god, that's fascinating. Like it is very much that in-group out-group feeling of us versus them. And yeah, like you said, it's not about the ethic or like the actual question behind it, but yeah, it's just that, are you standing with us?
Yes, exactly.
The like lack of questioning of a moral standing, which
yeah, and that kind of, you know, you see it with people who have, their parents are ethnic, but they've grown up in Britain. People are like, well, go back to where you come from. It's like, this is the only place I've ever lived. Like, what? Where do you want me to go? Like, it's amazing how when you get that in-group, out-group, critical analysis seems to just go bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is sadly resonating everywhere around the world. Right?
And you hope those children grown up not to think like children, but sadly not always true.
Sorry, we should go back to filmmaking. what was it about acting that drew you to it when you first wanted to study it? And
it was very much, I mean, I grew up in Cyprus, which growing up, I watched a lot of TV, a lot of movies. I was just upset, read a lot of books. Like, storytelling is very much within my blood. Like, I love the idea of creating a character, creating a world, and saying something bigger about kind of our existence and life. Like I see it very much as an examination of life. And acting was very much, I feel, the most primal way of experiencing that, because you're in the story, you're creating that, you're communicating directly in the audience if it's theater. And I'm there was, It hit me when I was, I think, 3 or 4, and I was doing the nativity play, and I was one of the shepherds. And the other two kids who were playing the shepherds walked off and I didn't realize. And I saw my mom in the audience and I waved. And I noticed that everyone had left. And I was like, oh no, and did like a double take. And everyone laughed. And this is going to make me sound like a megalomaniac. But in that moment, I remember feeling like, oh my God, there's power. and yet the power of story, of how you can affect and I think hopefully, you know, make people think about the world that we live in and how people live their lives. I think there's something really powerful in that. And yeah, acting felt like the most primal way of experiencing that, which is what attracted me to it. And like I said, I was choosing at one point between acting and animation. I saw those, although, you know, some people might not see it that way, but I saw them as very similar disciplines because you create a character, you create a world, and the animator kind of acts still, but like through their drawing. But yeah, so they're very similar disciplines in my head.
It's the same kind of wanting to get what's in your head. I've got a better way of saying it than in the heads of the people you've got watching your thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Going back to some of the, what were some of the practical tasks a producer does? So you've got a short film, got a story, you found a team that come together that resonate with that story so that magic can naturally happen. Mm-hmm. What are some of the practical tasks that you as a producer have to do during the process of making that short film?
So there's, you know, budgeting, scheduling, kind of making sure everything will be on track, and yeah, live action and animation, very different processes. And live action, you know, planning out the pre-production and then the shoot. Animation is like months and months ahead, and you very quickly recognize if, you know, you make a mistake in the first month and then that affects you half a year later and you're like, oh no. And yeah, then there's also the budgeting and just figuring out what spaces, what departments need what and when, and kind of how best to approach the different production challenges that might arise, whether that's in animation, you know, like the process of how it's being made, you know, finding locations for live action. And I mean, the live action short film that I did, we shot up in Yorkshire, and I had never been to Yorkshire, and there was so much I learned over that process about there being so many dead zones up there.
In terms of internet. And
because we can house everyone in the same place, so we had split accommodation. And then one space had a dead zone, and so we couldn't communicate. and thankfully, I was there, so everyone else went to sleep, and I was just running around the village trying to find a space where we could get something. And we ended up finding a way to communicate and found Wi-Fi, but... That was a crazy night.
That running around is literally producer summed up.
Yeah.
But you're literally running. Yeah. Normally it might be email, but in this case, I love that. Yeah,
it's constantly problem solving, which is really fun and can be really stressful. But
And I guess taking away as much of that as you can from your creative partners, the director, the writer, so that they can be as creative as they can be.
Yeah.
Because if they were also having to consider budget and pulling in funding and all these sort of things, then they can only focus so much on what they're actually telling.
Yeah, like you're trying to kind of lift the load out of everyone so that everyone can, you know, have the most fun they can have in the space and be creative. I always like to describe it as, you know, like you all kind of figure out what the playground is like, and then the producer brings in the fence kind of around it so that... You know, you don't know what's out there. Like, it might be wolves. So, like, let's just put a little fence here and kind of bring those boundaries in so that you can be the most creative that you can be. And I feel like boundaries are really important in the creative process, because otherwise you're lost.
Yeah. And directors can fall in love and writers can fall in love with things that then can't be achieved. And then there's a kind of sourness that can creep in with what you're then having to be like, well, we can only afford to shoot at these locations or this actor or any of those kind of constraints. So putting those boundaries in as softly, but with them still being real there, because they don't want to feel too constrained, but then they can have the freedom to play. I really like your playground analogy. Not referring to directors as children at all, but
it's about nurturing, isn't it?
Yeah,
that side of things, and I guess, and also, like, you know, if you spot one of the children in the playground's really good at climbing, you know, put in a climbing frame and see what they do with that, and then develop and nurture their climbing skills, or, you know, drawing or art.
And like while they're climbing, you just softly put in a crash mat.
So one of my favorite questions is asking someone, what are the kind of skills and traits that people in your career path have that you think make them very good? So if people go, oh yeah, that sounds like me, maybe this is for me. So I'll ask it to you first as a producer, and then after that, ask you for acting. So what are the kind of traits or skills that a good producer has?
I think seeing the big picture. And because it's filmmaking is a process that kind of runs a long way, kind of from, and as a producer, you're there from the very start till the very end. And knowing, kind of understanding when a project is able to kind of survive that process, but also what will be interesting ultimately. Like, there's one of the tricky things is, you can hear so many different stories and deciding on what is it that, you know, you kind of want to hitch your wagon. Is that a saying? Mm-hmm. I'm foreign. Mm-hmm. like hitch your wagon to.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And then if having a good balance, well, I don't know, because I feel there's so many different ways of being a producer. Like, there's some people who prefer being more logistically minded, some who prefer being more creative minded. And there's, like, similarly, I think knowing how to find the people that you work with well is really important, because that's when you'll know when what your strengths are, that you can bring something really useful to the process.
And what's really interesting in that advice there that you've got is finding what your strengths are and your weaknesses and filling those weaknesses perhaps with another producer.
Yes, exactly.
So. Just as you piece together a team, you piece together the producing side of the project.
Yeah, because it can be a very lonely process. And that's what I've been really thankful to my producer friends for being around when I felt like, you know, because you're kind of trying to keep the whole team up and be strong for everyone, and then quietly in the background be like, oh my God. But so, like, you have to make sure you have a good support system yourself, because it can be very easy to get lost within that process, I think. If you like numbers, if you like a story.
And then the same question again for what you think makes a good actor.
I think listening. That, I think, is at the core of a lot of the work, because it's the same concept of, you know, acting is reacting, but you have to be able to be present in the moment and hear what is happening and let that kind of affect you, and like let go of all ego.
And I guess not getting stuck on your lines.
You're
just thinking about your lines, you're not in the moment.
Yeah, presumably. Exactly. Yeah.
So a good actor can know their lines as if it's just part of what they were going to say anyway, but they're reacting live to what's happening.
I mean, there's always, like, you know, you learn your lines so that you can forget them.
I used to do a lot of school theatre when I was young, and I remember the plays that I was most nervous performing were the ones I didn't really know the lines. And then the ones I did, I was just like, they're just so there. I could just enjoy it because they're part of what I was going to say. I mean, it's incredible. The link between acting and producing, I don't think, you know, not many people necessarily talk about. And I don't think I had personally really linked together, but it's absolutely fascinating. The idea of the collaboration side of it and the piecing things together. And yeah, I'm not really got a question here. I'm just saying, brilliant.
Yeah. I'll echo that, because one of the things I think about a lot is where different roles lead people. Mm. So, like, you get a lot of actors that become directors, and you get cinematographers that will become directors, and then, you know, you can see it from art department, you know, designers becoming directors. But for example, you wouldn't get many location managers become directors. And then, but you do get location managers becoming producers because it's the same kind of interacting with lots of departments. Mm. And you've got one of the biggest budgets and you're there realizing the director's vision. So there's a lot of skills. But so I hadn't thought previously about acting being a good basis for producing. But as Tom says, you're right, because it's the same thing of being able to bring together various skill sets in order to make something come alive.
Mm.
That was terrible to say, but anyway.
I think, yeah, like one of the, and I mean, I recommend acting to everyone. It's fun. but what you get when you act is, you know, you're inside the story. So you feel kind of the rhythms and the structure on like a very guttural, instinctual level that I think can be a bit difficult when you become too heady about a script. Because you can analyze it, but at the end of the day, it's about the feeling and kind of what is coming through that way in the characters and to the audience ultimately.
I was going to ask a question about, we often like to ask guests, what would you say is one of your biggest mistakes as a producer? You know, what happened and what did you learn from it and how did that make you a better producer? And for the context, when you're at film school, if you choose to go to a film school in order to enter the industry, it's a really good time to make mistakes. So whatever you say, it's fine, you know, because you're learning to be a producer. So in that vein, what would you say is something that you really came home to you that you learned?
Yeah, I think, like I said, my live action film, it was shot in Yorkshire. Like it was a period Slavic folk horror shot in Yorkshire, and it like the scale of it was quite big on the modest budget that we had, and there were a lot of lessons within that I had to learn in terms of just ensuring everywhere, and I felt a little bit like I was tripping here and there and just kind of holding everything together because I don't feel like I'm answering this very well.
I was going to say, so you say it kind of a huge amount to achieve within that budget. So I guess what caused it to inflate into that size of project, and where could you maybe have steered it differently?
I think it was a lot to do with my inexperience, kind of not understanding necessarily the ramifications of some of the choices that I was making. So I think I learned, you know, just speak to more people at the end of the day, like get people's advice, people who have done it before. Because I was learning that kind of going through it and learning, you know, kind of having some of those conversations maybe a little bit too late. And really come together. Because one thing that I do love about producing is every process is completely different. Like every single film is going to have its own set of challenges. You're going to learn something completely new, and you can take what you learned from a previous process and apply it. But at the end of the day, like, you kind of want to challenge yourself at the end and be like, I don't know if I can pull this off. Let's do it. So I think just trying to have more conversations earlier, getting all of that in, and keeping that going. Because like I said, I don't feel I didn't know Yorkshire, and I learned a lot sometimes while we were there. And I was like, oh, okay.
I think there's something really interesting what you're saying there, which is a lesson I've seen a few people learn, and perhaps I learned as well, is not being afraid to ask questions, even if you're going to look stupid.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier about being the person who's kind of steering everything together, and you can't necessarily say, oh my God, what's going on, you know, because other people are also freaking out and you're kind of keeping that under control. So if you're, as a producer, unsure of something, there can be a tendency not to ask the stupid question because you're trying to keep the whole thing together. And if you say, I don't know, you know, if there's internet there, then everyone's going to freak out, you know, what are we going to need internet? Because how are we going to download this? I'm going to do, you know. And so you then maybe don't think to ask it or So the advice there, what I'm saying is as a producer, still feel free to ask the stupid questions.
Yes.
And actually, you would be a better producer if up front you just ask the stupid questions.
Yeah. And I think, that thought just went. I think it can also come down to how you ask those questions. Mm. Like, just approach it with calm and, you know, like, it's something we can all solve together rather than, oh my God, everyone freak out because I just thought of this.
Yeah. I suppose an example I would think of is I wasn't particularly well versed in camera, for example, when I started out producing, and I'm not necessarily now either. But if a camera person says, well, I need this or I need that, you might go, great, your logistic brain will kick in and go, right, I need to source that, that's just how much that would cost, etc. But you might not know, what is it? What is it for? And you might not think to ask that question, so that then later on down the line, when you maybe have a budget challenge, you can have a conversation about, is it still needed? Yes, it is, because you know what it's for and why it's so important. And so you're on the same vein, because a lot of those creatives that you collaborate with, you know, the director and the cinematographer, maybe the director is really good on camera, so they're having a conversation that you're not necessarily understanding what they're talking about. So you should just ask all the questions.
Always, every time. And I think that's a huge part of the job. And kind of going back to the previous question of, like, if you have these qualities, like, if you love asking questions, this is it. Because you're constantly interacting. Like, it's not only just expanding your own knowledge of the process and what is needed, but also an investigation of everyone's process. So even though, you know, you might have worked with, you might think that you understand the process of, you know, let's say a cinematographer, but one cinematographer is going to work differently from another, and they might have a completely different answer to your sets of questions. So, like, never assume within this process, and it's all communication. And like, again, you going back to the playground metaphor, it's, you have to find the right fence for the right playground.
Yeah.
And these can be adults in the playground. They're not necessarily children.
Yeah, no, I love playground.
When one of the best producers I ever worked with, habit of, you know, you'd have a director and they'd propose something that was completely unfeasible, on either cost or logistics or something. And they would let them kind of, I haven't got a better way of saying it, of like talk it out of like why they wanted to do it and what it was possible and what it would mean. And they'd just ask questions and they'd give them that space. And it was so clear that if anyone had come in and gone, well, that's not going to be possible, that would have really affected that director's ability to be creative for the rest of the day. And so just giving them that space over lunch to talk about why they'd want to do it and how they would do it and so on, and then checking back in with them at the end of the day and going, okay, so we've looked at it and that would mean doing this and this and which is most important to you, and I'm here to bring, made it one where they were like, actually, I've thought about it, that's not going to be possible. Whereas if that answer had been like presented to them rather than letting them come there, it would have been a less fun day on set, I can assure you.
Yeah, precisely. Like, it's it can often be like a very delicate tango where you never want to douse any fires, but like fun fires, not like
the real fire. Do tackle it.
Fire
service.
BAFTA winning producer advises, don't bother with fire extinguishers.
Oh boy. That's paraphrasing.
I suppose what you're surmising there is a big part of being a great producer is people skills. So outside of the context of making a film, you know, if you have these skills, you can, you know, deal with a sibling having a meltdown, or you can organize a birthday party. So if you have those skill sets, then perhaps you can come in and be a great producer. It's because you're able to deal with people. And I've always been surprised the number of producers I've met who, you know, maybe they were the sibling that did all helping people deal with meltdowns, or they had
mediator.
Like, yeah, the mediator, the person who had to just really understand people.
Yeah.
You know, and that does seem to be a core skill of a lot of great producers.
Yeah, and I think, I always see it as you kind of everyone's therapists at the same time. Kind of supporting everyone, while also in the funny way being everyone's bad guy.
How are you feeling? And no.
I'm curious, what is the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? Doesn't even need to be related to the industry.
Listen. No, wait, no. I mean, that's a good one. But remember the joy.
Oh, that's a great one.
That is, from... I this was on the first day of drama school. And our movement teacher, Helen Heaslip, love that woman. She just said, remember the joy. And I wrote joy on the front of my notebook, and I've held that with me ever since, like in any process, whatever you're going through. I think even if you're doing something that you hate, like find the joy, remember what you like doing. And it just makes everything so much easier and so much calmer, and you can enjoy the process, even if, you know, whatever you're doing, and there's beauty in everything, and there's... it's kind of the Mary Poppins spoonful of sugar moment.
But that's brilliant, because it's especially in, I mean, in any job, but especially in film, it's long hours, you're away from your family a lot if you're filming on location, like, and being able to connect it back to the moments where it feels just amazing.
Yeah. And I always feel like remembering what you enjoy really grounds you in the moment, and that makes it easier to tackle whatever is in front of you.
You're standing in the rain, you're covered in mud, and you're like, look at that. That's a film set with a lot of horses charging. Like, that's incredible. And instead of focusing on the, I'm absolutely soaking wet, covered in mud, and I've had 3 hours sleep.
Yeah. And especially as, you know, as a producer, like, your energy is going to reverberate throughout that set. So if, depending on that spectrum of emotion that you're on, it's going to trickle through.
It's like, I suppose, like in any workplace, a boss or a manager or someone who comes in a position of leadership who is in a bad mood, it can completely change the energy of the office or whatever work force you're in. I saw it described once, a producer as kind of being a CEO who starts a company, which is the film, builds the company, the people working for it, and then wraps the company up all in a space of however long that film will be, but you're up there at the top trying to help lead everything.
And it's interesting because slightly different to the CEO, I think you're right where you described it as a pivot, because it's producers are in a bizarre mix of having a lot of power, but also benefiting from when they use as little of it as it takes to realize the positions, because when a producer starts overruling a director, it can really interfere with that creative process in a way that a CEO of a company doesn't. I mean, it's always good to be collaborative, but there isn't the same, like, the director is often the person that the public knows, whereas the producer, whereas the CEO of the company is usually the most public facing person of that company. And so it's a really interesting job where you're you've got a lot of authority, but you're trying to realize other people's dreams.
Yeah. You're like, they're all the time, but you're not.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say a dream weaver.
Yeah.
Good, please.
I do not have it.
So for a lot of people with cost of living crisis and so on, you know, they want to work in the industry, but they don't live in London. I know you mentioned when you were acting, you'd also did a lot of jobs, trying to earn.
Did a lot of waking up at 3 a.m. for 5 a.m. shifts.
I was just seeing if you had any kind of recommendations for jobs that offer the most kind of flexibility, because particularly I'm imagining for acting, you've got to be able to make auditions.
Yeah.
So seeing if you recommended.
I mean, when I was beginning, I was doing a lot of, working in restaurants and cafes, because then I also got free food.
no bad thing, guys.
So that was like a practical decision on my part. But there's I think within this industry, being a freelancer and a creative, you to have that flexibility. So this is tricky because I'm trying to figure this out for myself a lot of time as well. But finding jobs that are within the industry are ideal. But like having, again, it depends if we're talking about like actor and producer. And oh God, it's so hard to give advice on that because it's such a difficult question.
My go-to is usually Uber because you manage your hours, but
oh, fair enough. But you need a car.
You need a car, which or delivery. Cyclist.
Oh yeah, if you have a bike, yeah.
Or if you're just very fast. Yeah,
I think when you're starting out in the industry, especially as a producer, don't be like be humble. You know, you don't need to have a massive ego. In fact, you shouldn't have a massive ego as a producer. So don't be, you know, you can be producing a BAFTA winning film and also work at a cafe, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have bills to pay and you need to eat, like you say, and then it's just about going with the flow of opportunities and, you know, whatever comes up. You know, we got taught a lot when we study producing about, you know, developing scripts, having scripts ready to go so that if you happen to meet the right person at the right time and they say, oh, you know, I work at this funder and we're looking for films that are Slavic folk horrors, you can be like, well, I have something that you might be interested in, and you've got that ready to go, but you're basically flowing with the opportunity.
Yeah.
And then sometimes something will, you know, will hit off because you've put together the perfect team and everything's come together, and sometimes it won't. But those are still sort of valid processes and experiences. And like you say, the joy is making the film.
Mm.
And so sometimes they'll be back to award winning and sometimes they won't. And then sometimes they will. And you're constantly flowing. And I think having, you know, not being too, you know, being humble enough that you can just take work where you can find it in between those pieces of opportunities, the way to do it.
Yeah. I think what you're saying about listening out to opportunities, like, yeah, like that comes back to kind of the being in the moment, listening. You never know what's going to take you anywhere or like what's going to help you expand your skill sets. Like, I feel like my career has been all over the place. Like, I had an opportunity to learn puppetry at one point, and I remember thinking, like, how's this going to come in handy? But I did it, and then I got some jobs off of it, and then in a live action film that I did, there were puppets involved, and I was like, great, I have so much knowledge about it. And like, I had so much, like, you never know what's going to come back around, because it's, yeah, just being open to where the road may take, because it's,
yeah, especially in this game where it's so, the people tend to be so varied and so creative, and lots of people work in different industries, so you never know when you're going to meet someone who's going to be a lifelong collaborator.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what relationships you call on years later and say, oh, you know, I'm looking for this, and you know.
I'm looking for a pottery studio to film it, and my main one just dropped out. I think we did a pottery class. Did you? Oh, yeah, no, I've got my own studio now. Amazing. Where is it? Let me come and see it.
I guess what we're saying is be a joy to be around. Be very good at communication and just flow through life. Being a good person, good at communicating and works hard, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's advice that's unlikely to work against you. Like, oh, I failed as a producer because I was a joy to be around. God damn you, dumb.
It's been such a joy to have you here and hear your experiences. We're getting close to the end. I would love to just maybe, let's finish up talking a bit about Crab Day.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the process? So you've talked about how it all came together and what you need to do when you're making a film. So the film's finished. What's the process as a producer once you've finished a film? Maybe specifically about Crab Day, what did you do once the film had, you know, had picture lock and sound lock and everything was finalized?
Then it started its festival journey, and it was applying to different festivals, and you know, it got into a lot of wonderful festivals around the world. With Crab Day, it kind of just organically grew, and I had like a lot of wonderful reactions with it. And yeah, then it got into a BAFTA qualifying one, and it was like, you know, you have to fill out other forms to kind of put it forward for that. And yeah, then the whole journey with the BAFTA was completely surreal, but wonderful. And we were able to take a good chunk of our team with us, which was amazing. We're potentially looking at growing something out in the world of Crab Day, kind of furthering it further. But watch the space.
Going to the BAFTAs and being BAFTA nominated is quite a fairly unique experience. A lot of brilliant producers out there, not all of them have had that experience. Mm. So would you be willing to share a bit about what it was like finding out that you were nominated, what then the communication is like with BAFTA in the lead up to, you know, to the actual ceremony, and then what it's like obviously while you're waiting to find out if you've won?
It's we first got onto the long list, and that in and of itself was incredible. Because the other thing is, we all believe so strongly in the story and its message, and we all deeply love the film. And that was already creating a platform for more people to see it. And so when the nominations came through, that also, you know, kind of increased. And then BAFTA put it on their YouTube account, which increased the film's reach even more, which was absolutely wonderful. And then, yeah, there's a lot of paperwork coming up to the ceremony, which fell on me.
And were you able to remember the joy during doing all this paperwork?
I think so. I've also been moving house recently, so it was all happening at the same time. So it was insane, but I was like, there is nothing to complain about here. The important thing was just to try and get as much of the team together as possible so that we can all celebrate the accomplishment together, because it's very much a labor of love from everyone involved. And the day itself was just surreal. You kind of show up and you're standing behind Andrew Scott, and then, you know, the press take all of his photos, and then you walk up and they're like, who is this? I'm like, let's go grab our drinks. And then you sit down and you don't know when your category is going to come up. And then,
surreal.
It is surreal.
Congratulations.
Thank you. it still feels like it's landing.
Yeah. But. So I think a lot of people listening to this, if they haven't had the fortune to see Crab Day yet, mm-hmm. I believe it's not out there yet in the public.
No, it's been taken off of YouTube, and it's still going around to festivals. So it's going to be some time until it's kind of more broadly available again.
So do share with us when you get a chance, and we'll happily share it with the audience.
Definitely
watch our socials, the podcast, and as soon as it's available, we'll put it out there for them so they can also enjoy the film.
I hope they do.
It's been absolutely amazing. My pleasure talking to you.
Oh, pleasure being here. Thank you so much. Yeah, this was great.
Cool. All right.
Thank you very much, Kes.